Welcome to the Habit Mechanic Podcast. To help you finish this year strongly and get ready for a successful 2024, we're re-releasing every podcast we've recorded so far that takes a deep dive into the Habit Mechanic book. The episode's coming up in a few moments. Remember, if you want to get your business off to a great start in January, get in touch to discuss how our Habit Mechanic keynotes or workshops can equip your people with practical skills that help them build super habits in 5 minutes. Or if you want to earn £100,000 per year working part-time by launching your own coaching business, we guarantee to help you do that in just 13 hours. Get in touch with us today to learn more about becoming a certified Habit Mechanic coach who can transform people's lives and is recognized as a world leader in the field. For more details, contact us via the website. The link is in the podcast notes. Or if you want to feel better and do better every day, download the Habit Mechanic University app from your app store. Enjoy the episode.
Hello, Habit Mechanics. Dr. John Finn here. Hope you're having a fantastic week so far. Welcome back to the Habit Mechanic podcast. We're going to talk about the brain today and how it actually works and really get into some of the reasons behind why we do lots of unhelpful things and often don't even notice those things that we're doing. Tell me to explore that today. And we're talking about chapter 11 of the Habit Mechanic. I'm joined by my friend and colleague, Andrew Whitelam. Andrew, how are you?
Hi there, John. Yeah, great to be with you on the podcast again. And chapter 11 has the title, What Really Happens Inside My Brain. And I'm really keen to explore it more with you, as you say. We'll get into that in a few moments. I think we can do a bit of a spoiler and say there's not really a lighthouse in the brain, is there? And John, you'll explain a bit more about that in a few moments. But firstly, I'd just like to ask you, John, the Habit Mechanic University app has been available now for free for a long time, and a lot of people are signing up to it and getting the benefits. But in July, you've got some exciting news coming on that. Please tell us more.
Yeah, so we're actually going to be launching some powerful new features in the app that make it really easy for people to build more new helpful habits. And by using those features, the value promise that we have is that you're going to be able to improve your happiness and performance by over 25% in 90 days. And the new tools you're going to be able to access include our habit mechanic assessment tools so that you can identify your personal and leadership destructive and super habits. So you're going to be able to use the tools that you see in the book, but actually store your data and analyze it so it's easier to monitor your habits. You're also going to be able to access our 30 plus award winning habit mechanic tools in the app so that you can destroy your destructive habits and start building new super habits. We're going to have live training and live masterclasses run by myself and colleagues to help you to improve your happiness, performance and leadership. We're going to have change challenges, flexible change challenges, to make it easier for you to supercharge your motivation and to keep fine-tuning your super habits. There's going to be over 100 bite-sized audio lessons in the app to help you to reduce your stress, supercharge your focus, productivity, work-life balance. And we're also going to include other things like our school success program, so that if you're a parent, you can start to help your child embed these tools into their day-to-day, or if you're a teacher, you can use the same insights with your pupils. And there'll be much, much more. So we're going to add a much richer experience into the app that gives users their own personal dashboard, which is going to be called Your Toolkit, and also have lots more events and just make it much easier for people that want to make positive change to get those 9 action factors working for them. And we're pretty sure that those features will be available from July.
Well, that sounds fantastic. I've certainly downloaded Habit Mechanic University and use it to submit daily tea plans. That sounds absolutely amazing. What's going to be coming in July, and I can't wait for that. And I guess we'd encourage everyone to download it now. You can do that for free, and then they'll be the first to know and experience or have the opportunity to benefit from these new features?
Yeah, so the people that are already signed up to the Habit Mechanic University app and who are signed up when we release a new feature will be the first to be able to access them. So I'd encourage people to sign up and just get used to the app, if nothing else. Also, the audiobook is in there for free. We have a foundation course in there. As you said, you'll see people in there using the tools in the At Your Best community. So yeah, if you don't already have the Habit Mechanic University app, you can download it from the App Store or the Google Play Store.
Well, that's really fantastic news for iPhone and Android users. And yeah, I can't wait for July to come. So looking forward very much to that. Well, okay then, John, back to the book, as it were, The Habit Mechanic and Chapter 11, What Really Happens Inside My Brain. And in this chapter, you talk in fascinating depth about the function of the brain and the consequences for us. And as I said, I know we talked in previous podcasts about the metaphor, the concept of the lighthouse brain. And yeah, it's just a metaphor. There isn't really a lighthouse in our brain, is there? But nevertheless, the characters that you describe are very active. Please tell us more.
Yeah, so there's not a lighthouse in our brain. But I think the most important thing to pay attention to in relation to your brain is that word attention, is that it's always on. You're always thinking about something. So we do have this almost spotlight of attention. And sometimes it's on things that are helping us to be at our best. Sometimes it's on things that are not helping us to be at our best. And we found that idea of a lighthouse metaphor is really helpful for people to understand that. We have episodic memories, and the visual sites in our brain are much older than the audio sites. You know, so we see, not to get too distracted here, but we see time and time again just how power vision is. So there's a great research experiment, for example, where a group of world-class wine tasters are given some red wine to review, and they all talk about this, the different characteristics of this red, etc., etc. And actually, it's not red wine, it's white wine. It's just been dyed. So this is how powerful our eyes are. And we see that time and time again through multiple experiments. So if we combine the power of vision with our episodic memories, that's why stories are so important for us. And that's why laced throughout the Habit Mechanic approach and the Tougher Minds approach are stories. Stories that make it easier to understand ourselves. But the stories are always based in really robust science. So in the Chapter 10 podcast, we talked about the simplest way we introduce the brain, which is through the lighthouse model. In Chapter 11, we go into a bit more detail about some of those mechanics that are actually driving our behaviour, and talk a bit more about where the willpower character and the hue, or as we call the ape brain, actually resides within the physical architecture of the brain.
Yeah, and most significantly, in the chapter, you talk in great detail about the consequences of these things, hue and horribly unhelpful emotions, hue and willpower or willamina power. So please do that for us now, if you would, John. What do they do? What are the consequences of these forces being active inside our brains, inside our minds?
If you want to fulfill your potential or help other people fulfill their potential so you can feel great and get the rewards and respect you deserve, then I want to give you a free physical copy of my new best-selling book, because you deserve to know the truth. The most important things for fulfilling your potential are not tips, tricks, hacks, therapy, coaching, meditation, breathwork, goal setting, journaling, or finding your why. I know it sounds irrational because we're so used to hearing about using these things to help us fulfill our potential. But these approaches are outdated and ineffective, and they are based on a big lie.
To find out more and get your free physical copy of Dr. John Finn's best-selling book, The Habit Mechanic, go to tougherminds.co.uk.
Yeah, so the dominant part of the brain, of our brain, is the limbic regions. And they are running most of what we're doing most of the time. So this automaticity that we talk about, this 98% to 100% of mindless thinking and doing, that is driven by the limbic regions of the brain. And that's where Hugh, horribly unhelpful emotions, lives. The limbic regions of the brain are really focused on survival. And they've done a pretty good job because our species, Homo sapiens, have been around for over 300,000 years now. So those limbic regions are responsible for keeping us alive and keeping us on the planet. And there are lots of things the limbic regions are interested in, but I think the simplest way to understand them is through three key things. One is they're designed to help us to stay alive. So you can think of simple functions like automating breathing, automating your heart beating, you know, those really basic things. You feel thirsty, so you drink something. You feel hungry, so you eat something. So you've got those basic alive functions. You can also think of those in the context of avoiding physical violence threats. So people know about the fight or flight response. So this idea of, which we'll talk more about when we talk about stress, but in a real practical example of that might be if you're walking down the road and there's, we don't see many lions, tigers and bears anymore. But if you're walking down the road and there's a group of people walking towards you and they look a little bit suspicious, a little bit dodgy, as we might say in the UK, then you might cross the road. If you hear a loud bang, it gets your attention. This is all driven by those alive centres in the limbic regions. Closely connected to that, the second thing that the limbic regions are interested in is how we're perceived by important people in our lives. So if we think about our ancestors, Homo sapiens, we are not the biggest, fastest animals on the planet. So when we were in our hunter-gatherer days where we didn't have houses to protect us, etc., we didn't live in such controlled communities where we could get rid of all the natural wildlife that might threaten us. We were very vulnerable, you know, to bigger predators ultimately. And the reason that we've been so prosperous is because we are better at working intelligently in a team than any other animal. So being liked by other people has been really important for our survival. So if other important people like you, your survival chances go up. Also, if other people like you, you can pass your genes on. So being liked by other people, what we call social status, connected to social status, is really important. It's been really important for our survival. And actually, we can see now that the sites in our brain that tell us about social status are actually hardwired into the parts of our brain that tell us we are thirsty and we are hungry. That's how fundamental they are. We know that things like paracetamol and ibuprofen, they're just as good at helping us to deal with emotional pain, social emotional pain, as they are physical pain. And that tells us that our brain doesn't really distinguish between the two things. So being liked by other people, our social status is so key. And that's one of the key drivers why social media has got so big so quickly, because it allows people to tell a story about their lives to lots of other people. So we've got a dominant brain that's interested in helping us to stay alive, being concerned about how we're perceived by other people, so life perceived. And the third thing is energy. So once there are no obvious threats, there's no physical violence threats, there's no social status threats, we've got enough basic stuff to keep us safe. The next thing our brain is interested in is saving energy, conserving energy. And in fact, our brain's number one operating rule is to do things as efficiently as possible. Because for most of our time on the planet, energy has been a scarce resource. We're hunter-gatherers. There hasn't always been supermarkets on the street corners. You know, most of our access to food now, our abundant access, is quite a new thing. You know, your grandparents' generations wouldn't have had anywhere near as much access to the food stocks that we do. So our brain is still trying to save energy at all costs. And that's actually why it turns everything that it can into a habit, because habits are the most energy efficient way of doing things. So we've got a brain that's interested in three core things. One is to stay alive. Two is to manage how you're perceived. Three is to conserve energy. So we think about the alive perceived energy brain. That's what we call the limbic regions, or in short, we call it the ape brain. You know, Daniel Dennett is a scientist I really admire, and he talks about the limbic regions of the brain. You can imagine that they're like a trillion microscopic cogs just whirling around mindlessly. We cannot conceptualize what a trillion means. I mean, it's too big for us to. A million is quite hard to think about. What would that look like if you had a million coins in front of you, or a million people? A trillion is, we can't get our heads around that. But that's how many little connections they are driving our behavior. And automatically, they are driven to help us to stay alive, be concerned about how we're perceived by important people in our lives, and then to save energy. So that's the ape brain.
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating, John. I think it's worth pointing out for people, your explanation's super clear, fantastically accessible and practical, but people might, I suppose, be a little skeptical. Well, hang on, we're in the 21st century now. I'm still driven by those primal forces, those predispositions that, you know, I'm not an expert on early man and the history of humanity, but cavemen might have had these sort of drivers. That's the reality of it.
Yes. So evolution is a driver for survival. So evolution's about adapting so that you can survive. But we haven't had an existential threat to our species in the last 300,000 years. So we haven't had a need to radically change our biology. There hasn't been a natural selection process going on at the level of the limbic regions of the brain. So, yeah, it's fundamentally we're driven by this, you know, caveman brain's an oversimplification. I think a better way would be to say a hunter-gatherer brain. We're designed to move around and solve problems and control our environment. You know, even in the last, you know, few years with the pandemic, we've seen the impact that's had on just the basics of good sleep, good diet, good exercise, because people are not necessarily moving around as much. That means it's harder to sleep. It's easier to consume unhealthful food. That's just a few year snapshot. We've been around for over 300,000 years. So again, that's quite a hard timeline to get your head around. We think of ancient history as the Tudors or, you know, something like that, which actually wasn't that long ago in terms of our existence on the earth. And 300,000 years is just the Homo sapien. We are part of a bigger group of human beings, which is also quite hard to get your head around, that we've probably wiped out the other the other types of humans, one way or another. So yeah, we are driven by a brain that's, you know, at least over 300,000 years old.
Yeah, and as you say in the book, and as we're going to discuss, there are consequences that we can observe because of this, and are absolutely central to how you help people, how you help people understand themselves, so they can then start helping themselves and take them on the journey. And then one of the ways in which you illustrate the consequences for us in the terms of our behaviour. Of having the ape brain and horribly unhelpful emotions is an exercise, a reading exercise, which is when you do it, it's a bit of a shock to the system. I've seen you do this exercise with a few groups of people, different groups of people, young, old, around the country, etc., and online and in person. And the results are invariably the same. Surprise. It's on page 106 of the Habit Mechanic book, if you've got it, and people might remember it. There's a paragraph of words which are, shall we say, jumbled, but when people read them, they understand them straight away. Tell us more about that, John.
Yeah, so you can test this out on page 106. Well, we can do, I suppose, a primary example for this, which is don't think of a white elephant. And you're already thinking about it. So we don't think consciously, we think mindlessly. And we might imagine that reading, and so the exercise on 106 is a reading exercise. We might imagine that reading is a very conscious process, but it's not. It's a habitual process. And what the exercise is showing is that we don't actually read every word letter by letter. We actually read in pictures. We just take little pictures of the words. And as long as each word has a percentage of letters in the right order, then we'll be able to understand what it means. So we have this illusion of a consciousness. But we are not. I mean, even our eyes, if you look at it neurobiologically, they're turning on and off. Our eyes on our live stream, they are taking little like pictures almost. It looks like a live stream, but it's not. That's why we don't get any. If I move my head around, I don't see like bumps if I was doing that with a camera, because my eyes are not a constant stream, which also might sound quite scary, but this is the reality. Consciousness is pretty much is an illusion. We have a brain that is more complex than anything else we understand in the known universe, and it's running most of the time on autopilot because it's trying to save energy. You know, and we've seen fantastic scientists dedicate their lives unpicking this, because that's quite a new understanding, just how unconscious we are. People like Daniel Kahneman, you may have read or tried to read Thinking Fast and Slow. People like George Lakoff, Daniel Dennett's work. So yeah, we are running on autopilot, and that's why you can make sense of jumbled words. You know, there's multiple iterations of those types of exercises you can do.
Yeah, and I think that exercise is a fantastic illustration, and as I say, it really brings home to people if they're in any doubt about is their brain. They might say, "My brain doesn't work like that." Well, yes, it does, and that exercise really does illustrate that. We'll talk very shortly about the consequences in greater depth then of the consequences for us as people in our modern world about this hard wiring that we have, the way the brain works that we've just set out, and how really in again, I'll do a spoiler, we're not designed to be our best in the modern world we live in. We're going to talk in greater depth about that in a few moments, but John, I just wanted to again to pause and say, ask you something about the program. I know that you're getting a lot of inquiries about, and you're talking to people about the Certified Habit Mechanic Coaching Program. This is a great opportunity for people to really go in a different direction in their lives. You're offering people the opportunity to train to become a certified habit mechanic coach and help other people. And you're going to guide people to develop their own coaching program, as it were. That's an overview. Just give us a bit more, if you could, about this opportunity for people.
Yeah, so we have very successfully now, over the last 6 months, been training up a really exciting group of people to become certified habit mechanic coaches. We've been helping them to create their own 90-day program so that they can have a really robust, I want to say, backbone to changing their clients' behavior or changing people's behavior within their organization. And we show them how to plug in the Habit Mechanic Toolkit into how they can help the people that they want to help. So some people might want to improve people's stress with a 90-day program, how they manage stress. Others want to work on helping their clients to become better leaders. Others to be more productive and focused for better work-life balance. So yeah, that it's really, really exciting. And the range of people that we're working with has actually even amazed me, because we're working with some of the, I mean, you could argue one of the organizations we're working with is probably the top performing organization in the world. And they got on the phone and said, we've read your book and we've recognized there's a lot we can learn from this. So we want to help you, we want you to train up some of our people. So it's been really amazing. But I suppose what we now know is that you can make a really good living as a habit mechanic coach, and you can make easily over £100,000 a year working part-time. You know, no doubt about that. And we'll show you how to do that. And that's pounds, not dollars. So if you're listening in the US, that's, I don't know what that equates to, 130,000, I think, something like that. So, you know, people are looking for a different path, a different career. They're sick of the 9-to-5. They're sick of giving blood, sweat and tears to an organization where they don't think they're always getting things back. So there's more people than ever that need habit mechanic support, and we can show you how to give that to them. And we'll show you how to do that by using our curriculum, but we'll show you how to tweak it for the needs of your clients. So you're going to be able to use the book and the app as the foundations, as the backbone to your program, and then you coach on top of that. So yeah, this is, you know, our mission is to make it as easy as possible for people to be at their best. So training people to become certified habit mechanic coaches is a natural progression for us, and it's been super successful over the last 6 months. So we just opened up a few more places, but this is the last time that we're going to offer the price point that we're offering, but the price is increasing. So if you haven't been in touch already, I'd suggest getting in touch if you want to get the very best price point.
Yeah, it sounds an amazing opportunity for people who are interested in becoming a coach. And as you say, more and more people are. And it's an important function in society. I think we were talking about artificial intelligence in at greater length on previous podcasts. And I remember one analyst had said that the job of coaching and supporting humans to humans, as it were, is going to become more and more relevant in our societies and communities as time goes on. So I think that's another great reason to look at this. And just to finally stress, this is an opportunity to work one-on-one with yourself to develop your own coaching program and learn directly from you.
Yeah, right now it is. Yeah, that will be forever. But right now I'm working with everyone one-to-one. So yeah, it's a great opportunity to do that. And yeah, as you say, Andrew, AI won't be able to do this anytime soon, in the sense of coaching people. elements of the job you currently do, AI will be able to do lots of that stuff very soon. I mean, the rate of AI development is astounding, even the experts in the field. So what they were predicting 2 years ago would never be possible in modern history. And I'll say, wow, this is looking like it really is going to be possible. But still, machines cannot communicate with humans like humans can, and coach them in the way that you'll learn how to coach them via becoming a habit mechanic coach.
Yeah, well, I just finally, sorry, John, I meant to say as well, of course, anybody who does have an interest in it should just get in touch with you via the website, presumably.
Yeah, if you can find the details on the website, on the become a certified, an internationally certified habit mechanic coach, and just contact us from there.
Fantastic. Right. Well, I would strongly suggest that everyone with an interest in coaching absolutely does that as a priority. Thanks for that, John. Let's delve back into chapter 11 then on the podcast. And we've talked previously about the ape brain, the alive perceived energy brain, and drilled down into that very, very in great and useful detail. And the takeaway, I think, that you stress in chapter 11 is that this means as humans in the society we live in, we're not designed to flourish necessarily, to be our best. Why does this predisposition, if you like, this hunter-gatherer brain not fit in our modern world?
Well, it's designed for survival. We're designed to survive. We're designed to control our environment. Not necessarily to be healthy and happy and at our best as it looks in the modern world. So if we just take the health component, for example, we have a world now where we don't need to, we're designed, for example, to walk about 12 miles a day. We don't even have to leave the house anymore. You know, some people, you might be working from home today, you don't have to actually leave the house, and some people won't. From a dietary perspective, I mean, there's actually a big BBC Panorama program on last week, or a big investigation coupled with maybe a couple of an investigative report from a big newspaper showing about the damaging impact of, in simple terms, ultra-processed food. You know, they'd put one of the things they were just using to demonstrate this insight was two twins on a sort of a natural healthy food diet, one on an ultra processed food diet, and just the damage the ultra processed food just had within 2 weeks. I mean, it's almost seismic damage, thankfully reversible. So my point is that we now have access to a lot of nutrition, a lot of food that is made in factories, that's made to look good. It's not made to be healthy for our body and for our brain, and therefore it damages our body and our brain. It didn't used to be that food didn't used to be accessible. Now it is. So we can be eating things that we think are healthy for us, but actually they're damaging our health. And also those foods are very deliberately designed to make us buy them. They say low fat, you know, they have, they're cheaper to make, so the supermarkets discount them down. So these are all tricking our ape brain to wanting to consume those types of foods. And then sleep has been massively eroded. I know that my grandparents' generation, on average, slept 1 hour extra per night than my generation does. That's like an extra night's sleep per week. That is huge. So just those three basic things we didn't used to have to even think about getting them right. Now we have to work quite hard to get them right. So we're not designed to find it necessarily easy to optimize the basics of good sleep, good diet, good exercise as they look in the 21st century world, because they all require effort to establish better habits. And at the same time, we've got the big corporates trying to hijack our attention so that we spend time doing what they want us to do, like staying up and watching a streaming service rather than going to sleep, for example. Yeah, and then You know, we live in a world of, I mean, the positive psychologist would call it a hedonic treadmill. We live in a world where it's easier than ever to get short-term gratification. So whether that's, you know, you can buy things now, can't you, online without even spending money. So there is it, I think, is it, I want to say karma or something like
I think
that.
it's called Klarna. Yeah,
Klarna.
it's the installment system, isn't it? I've not particularly looked at it, John, but yes, I know what you mean. You can,
And
we
Apple
don't
do it
have
as
to put
well.
your details in. It lets you have it for free there and then.
So you can have, you can even come, so you can get consumer goods without even spending any money. You can break off your boring task at work and check your social media. So we live in a world where it's easier than ever to get that short-term hit, that hedonic hit, that becomes addictive. And it disrupts the things we need to do to stay healthy, physically and mentally, both by disrupting our sleep, our diet, our exercise, you know, possibly social connections that we have, real life, face-to-face social connections. But it also stops us from making progress on meaningful work, which is key if we want to really feel happy. So people are chasing this quick hit, quick hit, quick hit. Quick short-term gratification, because the big businesses have worked out that's what our brain wants. It wants that dopamine hit constantly. So they've given it to us. They've given it easy access to it, where that stops us actually doing the sort of work we need to do to make progress on difficult things, which gives us that more deeply meaningful feeling of achievement and success and satisfaction. That's much more long-lasting than getting a like on a social media post, or eating a donut, or staying up later rather than getting a good night's sleep.
Yeah, and I think just to drill down into what you said again, the hedonic treadmill, which is a fantastic phrase, but yeah, slightly worrying. That obviously that's hedonism, as you say, pleasure first, above everything. I'm not a is it entomology, the study of words? I'm not an expert in that, but it's possibly from ancient Greek. But yeah, hedonism. I think we all understand that, and it's perhaps worth pointing out that this you mentioned the brain hormone dopamine that's connected to hedonism. We have a almost an injection of that when we experience pleasure. Is that right to say, John? Is that fair to say?
Nearly. So that's a myth, actually. So
Okay.
dopamine is an anticipatory reward. So we actually get dopamine in anticipation of doing something rewarding. So the donut or the chocolate brownie that's presented to you in the glass cabinet in the coffee shop you go to today, it's actually much more satisfying thinking about how good it's going to be than actually when you get it in your mouth. Because when you get it in your mouth, the feeling of satisfaction is never as good as your brain's told you it's going to be. So dopamine is actually an anticipation reward. You know, that's why, for example, you get the dot 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 on the in your text message or your WhatsApp group that someone's going to reply to you. It's giving you that gives you a dopamine hit. So yeah, that's a bit about dopamine. We talk probably quite a lot about that in the book.
Yes, we do, and it suddenly made me realize the significance of the word typing on WhatsApp. Yes, it's when you think about it in those terms, it's very clear about the anticipation. So we have this predisposition. We have habits that are not conducive to being our best in the modern world. You talk about survival habits as well in chapter 11, that we develop these. Explain more about that, please.
Yeah, well, on a I suppose a segue into that is that also the red dot you'll see on your phone. The companies know that most people associate red with danger. So that's why they put the that's why it's red. It's not an accident. So you think red, 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 problem, problem. Now you don't think that consciously, but that's what your subconscious brain is processing. Yeah, so if we have a brain that's driven to help us to stay alive, manage to be concerned about how we're perceived by other people, to save energy, it can lead to lots of unhelpful habits like procrastinating. So we procrastinate because we're trying to save energy, because doing mentally challenging work takes a lot of energy, but it doesn't give you a fast reward. So your brain, your right brain and Hugh tell you to break away and do something that gives you a fast reward. We get habitualized into telling ourselves a negative story about what other people think about us, why they don't like us, etc. I remember all the time that our brain is made up of about 100 billion neurons, and those neurons are changing all the time in accordance with what we practice. So when you practice procrastinating, you get better at it. When you practice worrying and beating yourself up, you get better at it. You develop more neurobiological connections in your brain for those things. So they're what I would think of as survival habits. And many, many people are getting better at them right now without even recognizing it, because they're just whirling around mindlessly. That way of thinking is just whirling around mindlessly in your brain. So it's really easy to get better at lots of unhelpful things.
Yeah, I mean, on page 110 of the book, in chapter 11, you have a list of survival habits, which I'm sure all of us recognize in ourselves, and perhaps feel some sort of guilt, I suppose, about experiencing them. But with this understanding that the habit mechanic gives us of how we work, it's easier to recognize this is innate. This is a predisposition we all have. And hopefully then that's the basis to, well, it is, in court, of course, the basis on which to move forward from that. In that list, you've got jumping to conclusions, I think, listed, John. I think it's worth just talking about that again relates to this idea of threat and being ostracized from a social group, if you like, that we want to assess everyone and make sure there's no threat to us, and also think about our social status and jumping to conclusions, which is, I think, something, I mean, I certainly experienced a great deal. I don't know if there's degrees of it, but it's something I experience a lot. And we touched on it when we talked about the reading exercise, how you just perceive something. So talk to us about that. Explain that specific example of a survival habit, if you would.
Yeah, so I think it's probably quite a general idea, actually, but the thing you said, your example you gave, the most specific example, is one of the things that we would connect to jumping to conclusions. Our brain's trying to save energy, so it just takes shortcuts. So, yeah, if you see someone that looks like you, you're more likely to like them and trust them than someone that doesn't look like you. You haven't spent any time with that person. It's just your brain making a shortcut. You might see an email from someone, see the odd keyword, and reply to that email without properly reading it. And your reply has nothing to do with the question you're being asked. So you've wasted some time. And you've wasted your own time, and you've wasted the other person's time. So that's another example. We might jump to conclusions about other people's behaviour, what their behaviour means, and we'll always, or more often than not, magnetise the threat in their actions. So we'll probably interpret it as more threatening than it possibly is. So they're doing that because they don't like me and they want me out of the business, rather than it might be they're doing that because they really care about me and they're trying to help me to be better. Our right brain's always going to go for the, or more likely than not, go for the threat, because that's what it's designed to do. So yeah, you know, cognitive shortcuts, jumping to conclusions. I'm speaking at a diversity, equity, and inclusion conference later this week, and you know, cognitive bias training is a huge part of that movement. I think there are some problems with cognitive bias training because it's a lot about knowing more and not actually helping people to build better habits. You could probably also call that jump into conclusions training. And the things that it teaches is, I think, frameworks to make it kind of slow down the thinking process, I suppose, so that you can maybe come to better decisions. So yeah, all this stuff ultimately, that our brain makes us do has a function and it has a purpose. So it's not like we want to rip it out of our systems. It's just we need to be more aware of it so that we can recognize when it's being activated in situations that are not helping us. So jumping to conclusions, if you go back to the reading example, helps us to read, read faster if you like. But if it's a really important document, which misreading it might have a poor consequences, then maybe you don't just want to do the normal way you'd read it. I'd read it out loud or something, or whatever it is. Yeah. So that's a bit more on jumping to conclusions.
Yeah, well, the logical follow-on from that then is, of course, as you say and you hinted at, we need to recognize this, we need to understand it, and then we need to start working on ourselves and go beyond this potentially damaging state. You talk about survival habits. In the next chapter, you talk about how to build new helpful habits and the concept of me power conditioning. And obviously we'll talk about that in the next episode of this podcast or the next episode where we discuss the Habit Mechanic book. And just give us a preview, if you would, John. We need to then think about this process of working on ourselves and getting better and feeling better.
Yeah, well, another we introduced two concepts in chapter 11. We've talked a lot about the ape brain. The second concept we introduce is the hack brain, the helpful attention control brain. This is our prefrontal cortex, and it's where willpower lives. And it's this idea that so we're always paying attention. That's what's represented by the lighthouse metaphor. We can see how instinctively unhelpful sometimes that what we pay attention to is for our health, our happiness, and our performance. And that's what we've really unpacked in this podcast so far. But we're not helpless. We can intervene. And in the lighthouse brain, when we talk about willpower, here we go a bit further and we talk about hack helpful attention control. So our willpower, which lives in our conscious brain, it's our ability to intercede, to actually say, wait a minute, worrying about this is not helping me. Wait a minute, staying up till 2 o'clock in the morning when I need to get up at six isn't helping me. Wait a minute, not going out today and moving around is not helping. So we can intercede, and we do that via the prefrontal cortex, which we call the hack brain, helpful attention control. And we're going to start to see the centrality of attention. And if we can start to get more control over our attention, and hopefully hack, it works in two ways. We can hack the ape brain, but it's also an acronym, helpful attention control. It's the first step to starting to build better habits, and the first step to becoming a habit mechanic is to start doing me power conditioning, which we'll talk about when we unpack chapter 12.
Yeah, I very much look forward to that. And yeah, well, thank you so much for this deep dive into chapter 11, John. It's been fascinating as always. And yeah, people, of course, if they haven't read the Habit Mechanic already, they should do, they can do. And then Habit Mechanic University app, which we can see on screen, available from the App Store and Google Play, to learn more about how to start working on yourself and feeling better and doing better every day. Yeah, I look forward to chapter 12 to learn more about the vast, sophisticated body of science that underpins all this, but presented in such an accessible and simple way. It really is fascinating. Yeah, so thanks again for your time, John. Thanks to everyone for listening. Don't forget, please do like the podcast, leave a comment, subscribe to it on the podcast platform of your choice. And why not share it as well if you think it's going to help somebody? Please do that. And of course, 5 stars are always very much appreciated again on the podcast platform of your choice. So thanks for listening. John, thanks for your time. Anything you'd like to say in closing?
Yeah, I'd just like to say at the heart of becoming a habit mechanic is learning. And we've talked a lot about learning in chapter 5. We'll talk more about that actually in chapter 26. But the core part of learning is repeat to remember, remember to repeat. So here's a little test for you. What does APE stand for? And what does HAC stand for? And if it's helpful, write down the answers. And this is how we change, by repetition, by practice. If you practice beating yourself up lots, you practice changing in that direction. And if you practice doing more helpful things, you get better in the more helpful direction. So if it's helpful, write down, what does APE stand for? APE. And what does HAC stand for? HAC. Remember, you're only one habit away.
Thanks for listening. Remember, if you want to get your business off to a great start in January, get in touch to discuss how our Habit Mechanic keynotes or workshops can equip your people with practical skills that help them build super habits in 5 minutes. Or if you want to earn $100,000 a year working part-time by launching your own coaching business, we guarantee to help you do that in just 13 hours. Get in touch with us today to learn more about becoming a certified habit mechanic coach who can transform people's lives and is recognized as a world leader in the field. For more details, contact us via the website. The link is in the podcast notes. Or if you want to feel better and do better every day, download the Habit Mechanic University app from your app store. Thanks again for listening.